Hello, my name is Simon Ward, and I would like to welcome you to the Triathlon Coach podcast. If you don't already know me, I'm the founder of thetriathloncoach.com and the SWAT Inner Circle, and I've been a triathlon coach for over 20 years, working with absolute beginners right up to Olympic champions and covering all distances from sprint to Ironman. Now it's my goal in this weekly 30-minute podcast to share practical, usable advice from the best athletes, coaches and experts from the world of triathlon so that you can get the most from your training time and maximise your enjoyment of the triathlon lifestyle. So as I've already said, we've got just 30 minutes, so let's get rolling with today's guest. Who is Louisa Edmonston? Good morning, Louisa.
Good morning, Simon.
So we have some typically Scottish weather for you today.
We do, yes. I'm not too keen on it.
No, prefer the warmth.
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
Definitely.
Well, let me introduce Louisa, who is sometimes known, but only amongst her friends, as the White Witch. The reason for that will become clear later on. But Louisa is a physiotherapist. She works at the Coach House Sports Physiotherapy Clinic in Leeds, which you may have heard me talk about before. She's a colleague of Alison Rose, who was one of our earliest podcast guests, and she is an extremely skillful practitioner. And let me tell you, before Louisa became a physiotherapist, she got a degree in anatomy. And then to continue being a student, she took a master's in sports medicine, and then she did another master's in physiotherapy. And at that point then, she decided to become, well, you were an age group triathlete, Louisa, I think, were you?
I was, yes. And that was after the sports medicine degree, but before the physiotherapy degree. I was age group for probably about 6 months.
Okay. And you were, your best result as an age group then was 8th in the European long course. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
It was.
And then you took.
It was 8th overall.
Oh, okay.
First in age group by about an hour and a half.
Oh, racing against the pros then. So you would have been 8th pro then if you'd been racing. Yep. Right, okay. So that gave you the sort of impetus and confidence to turn professional.
Yes.
And you decided that, being ambitious, that your first Ironman as a professional would be Ironman Lanzarote, only the
certainly
hardest
would
one.
Be, absolutely. If you're going to do it, you're going to pick the hardest.
So that was where we first met, back in 2005?
It was indeed, yes.
Yeah, and you had a tough day, I remember.
Yes.
Our first introduction was you being wheeled into the ambulance on a stretcher after you'd finished, and me sitting in the front of the ambulance accompanying you to hospital.
Yes, it was, and I have no recollection of that whatsoever.
Well, that's all right. We're not here to talk about that, but you did qualify for Hawaii there, but you weren't able to go, I think.
No, I did qualify. That was the only thing that was keeping me going to the finish line, but no, I couldn't go. I tore a muscle in another race earlier that year, and so couldn't train what I needed to do for Hawaii, so decided to pull out.
Okay, well, probably for the best, certainly for me anyway, that you decided to pursue physiotherapy. Now, I wanted to talk specifically about how we met in professional circumstances, which is the bike fitting. Now, most of our listeners will probably be familiar with bike fitting and the reason that it's important for cyclists and triathletes. But I would think that most of them are also familiar with the more modern and probably more popular systems like Retool and those systems that involve infrared dots placed on different joints and digital systems on the computer. But you use something completely different. So can you tell us why that is?
I do, because I look at the body, thinking the body is the key to finding a good bike fit. If the body isn't ready for certain positions, then you're never going to hold that position on the bike, and it may well cause injury by you being in the set position if your body can't handle it.
So my reckon, because you did a bike fit for me last year when I got that nice new bike for Hawaii.
I did, yes.
And showed me that what I thought was a good position was actually not that good at all, and probably the reason why I had a tight hip. But my recollection of that is that you didn't use anything more modern than a pencil and a piece of paper and your own practiced eye.
Yes, quite right. That is all I used. Yep.
Okay, so for those of you who like old school or going back to basics, Louisa's bike fitting technique will suit you down to the ground. However, let me tell you, it's definitely not archaic. It's really up to date. So let's start off at the beginning then, Louisa. I come to see you. I've booked in for a bike fit. I come along with my bike and my cycling shoes and the kit I'm going to use. We go into the little gym area at Coach House. you set my bike up. And then you spent the next hour chatting to me. We didn't go near the bike. So tell me about that process then.
No, well, the first process is we want to get to know you as an athlete and as a person. So asking about the type of training that you're doing, what your aims are. So whether it was an Ironman, is it being in a aerodynamic position, or is it that you're just more of a recreational athlete that just wants to feel comfortable on the bike? So get a bit more of an idea as to what I'm needing to get you to. And then most importantly, a full past medical history, right from the word go since you were born, looking at any accidents, injuries, surgeries, any medical conditions that you may have, any injuries that keep reoccurring that you're struggling with, because that will all affect how you move as a person.
So I can understand why if I'd had a knee operation in the last couple of years, or I'd had something wrong with my back, that might be impacting me now. But how would something that happened when I was 10 or 12 be impacting me now? Let's take my particular sporting history there. I broke my collarbone.
Yeah.
It was just a crack. Wasn't a really bad one. When I was 17. So how would that impact me now? Being 54, so it's 37 years ago.
Yeah, that will impact you quite a bit. I need to know a little bit more about the rehabilitation that you got from it, and whether being the collarbone, if that was fractured, and then whether you were in sling for quite a while, that will cause a restriction in your shoulder, your upper rib cage, and your neck. If you're in that position for a while, the tissues will shorten very, very quickly. And then if you don't get that moving fully, getting some manual therapy into there, or you don't move it correctly and strengthen the muscles that maybe help to control the neck, the shoulder, then of course that's going to affect how you move. And not just at the shoulder, it'll affect what happens at the pelvis. There's a lot of research going on that shoulder injuries later on will then present themselves as an ankle injury in the opposite side, and vice versa.
Achilles problems?
Quite possibly, yes.
So, so actually, it seems like even if somebody came to see you for a bike fit, yep, the information that you're gleaning from this questioning would actually be quite useful in other parts of their sporting life. So for a triathlete, what you find might actually have an impact on their ability to swim or run better and be more resilient as an athlete.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I work with the triathletes, I do look at quite a few different things, because I know it is the three different sports. It's not just the bike fit.
Yeah. But of course, the bike is important. It's the largest part of the race.
Yeah.
And it's the one part that not just has the most significant impact on your finishing time, but also has a significant impact on your run time and your, yep, ability to run. So getting a good bike fit is setting us up for a run closer to our potential.
Quite possibly, yes, if you're strong enough to hold that position and be fit enough so that you can get off and run efficiently.
Okay, so let's go back to this assessment then. So,
yep,
you go from top to toe.
Yep, do indeed.
You look at the neck, you look at, I've been staggered sometimes when I've been for treatment, and you know, the first 15 minutes have been spent with your fingers inside my mouth manipulating my jawbone. Same with Alison. It's this,
yep.
So again, this is perhaps where the white witch
it is
title
indeed
comes from, is that, you know, I'd never had any idea that my jaw,
yep,
might be affecting things lower down the chain. I mean, when now I think about it logically,
yeah,
I can understand that. But at that, yep, time, I was like, what on earth is going on here? So why do you start at the jaw?
It depends on what we find in your past medical history and also what we're looking at. If we see that when you're talking and your jaw, your chin is going down in one direction, we may well pay a bit of attention to that. The jaw muscles attach into part of the, the cranium, your skull, and that then affects the dura, the lining of the brain and the spinal cord, and that will affect how you move. Nerves are covered in the lining, which is the dura, so if it's tethered up one end, of course that's going to affect all the way down. And that will affect your straight leg raise, which is you like doing a hamstring stretch. That will affect the length of the nerves throughout the whole body. So,
wow,
depends on the past medical history a lot. If you've had a head injury, we jump on it straight away, because we know a lot of it will be driven from that area.
Yeah, and I guess you know, because I do remember having a head injury when I was at school. I needed about 15 stitches in a head wound on the side of my skull. And I suppose when you're that young, you bounce back from things, so you don't really notice the impact it's having. But I guess if there is a little bit of tightness, it does start to affect you as your whole body starts to tighten up when you get into your 30s, late 30s, 40s.
Yeah, even younger than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, can have an impact from, you know, a couple of years later.
But I suppose when you're younger, you've got, you know, your ligaments are more mobile, you've got more collagen, so the body adapts by other things taking up the strain or...
Very much so. And it's those adaptations that then lead into the injury that we then see later on. But eventually we'll trace it back to this is caused by that, which was caused by that.
So we can uncover all sorts of things.
Yep,
so it's actually, in terms of an investment here, and this isn't a sales pitch from me on behalf of you, but in terms of investment in finding out things that might lead to injuries later on, this is actually a very useful process.
Yep, very much so. Very much so.
Okay, so you go from top to toe. The areas that I would think most people think about are, you know, shoulders and position on the aero bars.
Yep.
How tight you are in the lower back.
Yep.
And how high or low the bars and stem need to be.
Yep.
The width of the armrests to allow you to breathe. I remembered that somebody from wind tunnel test had told me that I needed elbows close together, but you moved them apart, so it would give me more time to breathe on the basis that it's everything's a compromise, but in the long run, this would be better and more relaxing.
Yep, yes, very much so. If you can't breathe, then what's the point in being in an aerodynamic position?
Well, it is an aerobic sport, which means with oxygen, isn't it?
You may want to breathe.
So if you can't breathe, you're in a little bit of trouble. Okay, so you go through all this top to toe. You're looking at calf tightness. You're looking at Achilles tightness, particularly. You're looking at the way my pelvis moves and hip flexors, as we talk about just about every podcast now. The hip flexors getting mentioned somewhere.
Yep.
They must be the most popular joint in the body, aren't they?
Yeah. The psoas muscle, one of the hip flexors, very, very important muscle. It's a big core muscle to stabilize your spine when you're bending forwards. But also if that is tight, it will tilt your pelvis forwards. So then when you come to get off the bike, if your pelvis is tilted forwards, you're not going to be able to use your glutes because your pelvis isn't in the right position. It also attaches into the bottom of the diaphragm. So if it is tight and you're not breathing correctly, that's going to tighten up even further, draw you forwards. You won't be able to rotate. You won't be able to breathe correctly. So, yes,
sounds
it's
like
a very important muscle.
Sounds like a disaster. Well, I guess, and here we are sitting now with slightly leaning forward with tighter hip flexors. We ought to be standing up to
and
do this podcast.
And cross legs.
Yeah, yeah. But this is the posture that most people would adapt all day. And then when they sit on the bike or when they run or even when they just sleep and lie in that fetal position, those hip flexors are tightened more than they're released, aren't they?
Yep. You know, everything is sat. You sat, have your meal, you're sitting, studying at work, sitting in the car, sitting on the bike. You're not doing anything to open the pelvis and chest up.
So given the amount of time we spent sat in a position where hip flexors are tight and flexed, perhaps maybe later on we should talk about how much time we should spend trying to reverse that process.
Yes.
Okay, so at what point in this assessment are you going to start looking at the bike then? Are we going to take an hour over this?
At least. It's so important to look at the body. So we're looking at numerous different things from posture, looking at your front, the back of you, side to side, how you stand, how you move. So doing a single leg squat, a lateral lunge, just looking at how you control the pelvis and the torso.
So what will a single leg squat tell you about how I'm able to sit on my bike and then ride?
Yeah, it'll tell me a lot. It's a single leg sport, like running as well. it'll give me an idea as to you, the control over your knee, the control over your pelvis, and also whether you're able to use your glutes. So we see quite a lot of people when they do a single leg lunge or single leg squat, the knee will come in slightly. It will also go way over the toes if you were to look directly down.
So forward of the toes.
Forwards of the toes, yeah. So that would tell me, right, they don't have the ability to, one, disassociate the hip from the pelvis, but also they're very, very quad dominant, so they're not using the outer range of their glutes. So the shin in an ideal world would stay vertical.
Now that's an interesting, just while we're on that then, cycling, is it quad dominant or hamstring dominant?
It's a bit of both, depending on which part of the stroke you're looking at.
So the hamstrings are involved.
They are involved very much. Yeah. So they're more on the so as you get to, I can't remember exactly what ankle it is, then the hamstrings should kick in, which will then begin to flex the knee. So you're bending the knee, bringing the foot back down and round.
So I seem to remember that there was a debate a while ago about the reason we sit forward on the bike, more over the bottom bracket, is so that the quads can be more active while riding.
Yep.
Is that right? So that then when we run, we can be more hamstring dominant. Is that right?
I'm not sure. The reason we look at that position there is because as you go through the cycle moment, there's a point where your quads should begin to switch off. So they're not trying to straighten the leg. I'll have to do it. Not trying to straighten leg. At the same time, when you go round the circle of the pedal stroke, where hamstrings should be kicking in to pull the foot back. So if quads are on for too long and hamstrings are trying to do the work, you're going to get a big shearing force through the knee, which can then massively increase the risk of a knee injury.
So is that what happens? Is that the sort of effect you get when you sit further back on
the
saddle,
like
on a road bike?
When you're further forwards.
Oh,
if you're
okay.
Slightly further forwards, your quads won't switch off in time. So they're going to be fighting against hamstrings, which causes a shearing effect around the knee.
Fine. Okay. All right, so you've spent an hour.
Yep.
looking at that, an hour or more, maybe.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Depending
on what we see.
Badly people have treated their body over the years.
And I also like to explain what I'm doing and why while I'm going along, so you begin to understand, why am I looking at you doing a single leg squat? Why am I looking at you doing a calf raise? What's that got to do with it?
Okay, so you then put the rider onto the bike.
Yep.
And you go through the same process regardless of the type of bike that somebody's riding or the type of riding they compete at.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yep.
Okay. Just some out of interest, because it often comes up in conversation where someone will say, oh, yeah, I had a bike fit a couple of years ago, so I know what my measurements are.
Yeah.
How often would you say that if somebody was really interested in performance, and getting the best out of themselves, that they ought to be having a bike fit?
Yeah, probably going through it twice a year, maybe. Because the body does change, and we'll come on to it later. With the bike fit, we give recommendations as to what we've seen. So for example, if your hamstring length or your straight leg raise isn't very good, yet you want to be in a very aerodynamic position, we know we need to work on that so you become more aero. So I may say, I don't want to put the saddle any higher. You can't cope with that position at this moment. But if we work on this, then we may well be able to put the saddle up a bit higher so you can become more aero, you know, and just strengthening various parts of the body.
So ideally, I would have a bike fit with you now to set up my time trial bike for the summer.
Yep.
And then ride that through the summer. And maybe if I was going for a really important race, I might come and see you again for another bike fit just before that race for just some tweaking.
Yep.
And then as I transition into my winter riding, I'd come back and see you to set up my winter bike to make sure. I wouldn't say, no, we did this 2 years ago, Louisa.
Your body will have changed considerably over 2 years.
Okay. So the rider sits on the bike.
Yep.
Still no gadgets, just
eye. No gadgets,
your hands.
Just my eye. So I'm just having a look at the rider from behind, see what's happening at the pelvis, the knees, the feet. Having a look from side on, again, just looking at the position, you know, if they're hunched up, shoulders up round your ears, if one side of the body is rotated, are you hitching up? And then looking at the front as well to see the direction of the knees, how wide the handlebars are. Just having a look.
So I remember talking to another bike fitter, and he mentioned to me a conversation where gentleman had bought this very expensive bike in.
Yep.
And then, as they put it on the rig,
yep,
the gentleman, the bike rider, said, "Oh, I hope it fits." Right? It was the first time he bought it. He bought it more because it was a super cool bike. Yep. It was the only one.
Yeah.
Have you ever got to a point where somebody's brought a bike in?
Yep.
You know, the bike they're intending to race on, and you've actually... Yep. realized and maybe had the conversation that this bike wasn't the right one for them?
Yes, numerous times. Most people, mainly men, don't really mind. Oh, are you telling me I've got to go back to the wife and say I need a new bike? So they don't usually mind. But yes, there are a lot of things you can do. You can alter the back end, changing the seat tube, whether you get one that's further forward, one further back. You can change the front end, the stem length. The issues you have then are also about control. So if you increase the stem length, the turning angle is going to be further away from you, so you may have less control over it. And the same thing at the back end. If you take the saddle too far forwards, then you're going to have less control over the back end of the bike. So it's about a compromise as to what fits that body at that time on the bike you have brought in.
So some of the more recent bikes, though, have an integral stem
and
handlebar system, don't they? So if you've got something like that, your options for moving it are much more limited. We're sort of going off track here, but I think it's important. Is there anything that a rider can do before they buy the bike to make sure? I mean, let's say that some bikes have slightly longer top tubes and may not suit somebody who has a slightly shorter torso. Some bikes have shorter top tubes that might not suit somebody who's slightly shorter in the legs and longer in the torso. So is there any way of sort of doing a brief assessment by the rider in the shop before they spend the money on a bike?
Most good bike shops should be able to take certain measurements. Like the classic one is like your inside leg, and your height or your inside leg is divided, I think it's by 1.43 or something like that. But also, you just doing your research, possibly, if you know you've got short legs and a long body, looking and see if you can find a bike manufacturer that maybe caters for that or has a longer top tube rather than a one that comes up from the pedal, the down tube.
Seat tube,
that's the one. So, and again, you go to a good bike shop who are, you know, educated in that, they should be able to tell you.
Okay, so takes about half an hour, does it, or an hour?
The bike fit itself.
Yes.
We say 2.5 hours
from the moment the person walks in to the moment they leave with the bike.
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
So when they leave with the bike,
yep,
what are they getting?
They are getting the bike set up in the position for them at that moment in time. They also get some advice about if they need to get a shorter stem or something like that, some advice about that. They then also get a full report about what I have found. So that will give any strengths, weaknesses, mobility issues, going through a bit of their past medical history that I feel is significant in how they move. Plus also, the bit most people don't like, the rehabilitation exercises, advice that I would say that they should need to do to help improve them, get them stronger, less likely to get injured in the future, but also to say, as an example again, going back to improving their aerodynamic position, little things that they can do to help themselves. And a lot of it, that's what it comes down to. The bike fit may just be a little tweak. It's then about them doing their homework to make them better for it.
Right. So the bike fit isn't the bike that's going to get you that sub 5 hours.
No.
It could do, but you've got work to do if you want to make the most of that bike
absolutely.
Fit. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
One more question then. We, as coaches and probably physiotherapists talk about sports which create more injuries. So of the triathlon three disciplines, running is responsible for the majority of the injuries.
Yep.
And a lot of people think that unless you fall off your bike and hit the deck hard or you collide with something else, that you really aren't going to get that many injuries directly from cycling. But if your bike's set up wrongly, am I right in thinking that you could get a tightness that will then lead to a problem where you get what's apparently a running injury, but actually the catalyst for that was poor bike
fit? From the bike, absolutely. It's a more of an overuse injuries that you get on the bike with recreational cyclists. They've looked at, and 87% of the injuries come from overuse. So that's just overloading certain areas that then get tighter. You're not paying attention when things get tight and you then try and run off the bike, and that's what's causing the injury. Yeah.
Okay. I think then that would be a good place to end this conversation, Louisa, because I want to come back and talk to chat with you about what we do when we've got home. So this would be a nice break.
Yeah.
So just to summarize then, if somebody comes to Coach House, they book in for an appointment, they need about 2.5 hours, they get a full assessment, top to toe, physical assessment, like an MOT.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which highlights the strengths, the weaknesses, the limiters.
Yes.
They then get a bike fit, which fits them to that bike based on the information that they've given you. So the type of riding and racing they're going to be doing throughout the year. And when they leave, they get that full report. My recollection was that the report I had was about 4 or 5 pages long. Well, that might just be an indication of the number of problems I've had in the past. But they get that, and there's an identification of the limiters, but also the exercises and what you call prehabilitation work that can be done to change that.
Yep.
And if an athlete wants to go away from there and get the most out of that bike position, there's got to be some effort on their behalf to make that position work.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
So listeners, that's the end of this particular part of the conversation. Louisa and I will be back for part two, where we will discuss the work that you, the rider, then have to do to make the most from Louisa's hard work.
The most important part.
So for now, it's goodbye from me. Thank you very much. And Louisa.
And it's goodbye from me.
That wraps up this week's episode. I'd just like to say thank you for taking the time to listen to the conversation today, and I hope you learned at least one thing that you can put into practice in your training. Now, if this was your first time listening, please go back and listen to our previous episodes. I can guarantee that they will be just as good as you heard from today's guest. If you've listened to all the episodes so far, then thank you so much for continuing this learning journey with me. As you might be aware, reviews and ratings are the currency of podcasts, so I would really appreciate it if you could leave a review and a rating on iTunes or Podbean. You could also follow me at the same time. I also have a free gift for you. In 30 years of competing in triathlon and 20 years of coaching, I've learned an awful lot from my own experiences and from some of the guests who have and will appear on this show. And I feel it's my duty, as I approach the latter stage of my coaching career, to share these with you. So I've put together 25 of my best training, racing and lifestyle strategies, and I've squeezed them down into just 2 pages of content. And in order to get hold of this, all you need to do is email triathlonsuccess to beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she will send it right back out to you. You could also think about joining my Facebook community. It's called the Triathlon Coach Cafe. We've got over 2,300 members just like you, eager to find out more about how to improve their training and share their successes with people. It's free to join, but you will have to ask. So go along there, answer the questions, and then we'll even do a little video each week to answer your questions. Finally, if you want to make sure you don't miss future episodes, please subscribe using Podbean or iTunes. We release new episodes every Wednesday. So that's all for now. See you again next week, same time, same place.